Guasó, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 198 of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan, here on the sunny, rainy, cloudy, beautiful West Coast. Basically depends on the hour, really these days. We know very well, so we went on a Third Sub hike the other day, right, leading into this recording. Started out in the pissing rain, finished in the sun. And I think that's fitting to place to start, because it kind of reminds us of the Whitecaps start to the season. Sometimes it's really sunny. Sometimes it's been pissing rain. Sometimes in the same game, like against RSL, which we'll dive into, kind of get a bit of both. It's been a weird one, and now the Whitecaps had a chance to finish the weekend top of the West. Unfortunately, they miss out, but they get a huge, huge game this week. Whitecaps Timbers, over 23,000 in the building. I imagine a strong contingent of Portland fans making the way up. You get three. It's a Canadian clash. You get like all four Canadians in the three that will play on Portland. Big one ahead. But before we break down everything and, of course, preview the weekend, Sam, how are you doing today?
Yeah, doing well, Alex. Sufficiently dried out from yesterday. And, you know, as you said, you know, this is, I think, an appropriate matchup this weekend, because you live in the Pacific Northwest, as both these teams do. You have to embrace the elements both on and off the pitch. That's an important part of life up here. So we tried to do that yesterday. And yeah, I think both these teams as well, they've had to embrace the volatility of early season MLS play. It's been up and down. We were chatting just a couple of minutes ago, for really every team in the West other than maybe Minnesota, it's been a mixed bag so far. And even Minnesota, you know, they've been doing it a little bit by the skin of their teeth at times. So as you mentioned, we're going to dive back into what happened against RSL. I guess I brought the bad luck with me from the East Coast. You know, the Whitecaps, in a weird turn of fate, have two road wins and only 1 point at home from their first two home matches. That's been strange. So we're gonna take a look at what happened just a little bit, and then, you know, go around the MLS as we've been doing this season, and then also tee you up for Portland this weekend, which sounds like it's going to be a great crowd, Cascadia environment, 7:30 on a Saturday. I'm very, very excited for this one. So yeah, looking forward to getting into it as always.
Yeah, definitely lots to dive into in this one. And yeah, such a strange game. But funnily enough, let's just, before we dive into this RSL recap, let's play a little bit of a, you know, maybe if I was up for, you could play, this is where, if there's a listener, you can play Deja Vu by Olivia Rodrigo. Because the Whitecaps had a bit of deja vu this weekend, right? I'll just read you three score lines. February 25th, 2023, RSL comes to town, a snowy Vancouver, BC place, roofs closed. It's very cold in there, by the way. Well, what a game. Jervaine Brown scores, opens the scoring, 24th minute. Whitecaps are cruising, Justin Glad, 70th minute. And Damir Krylak, now Whitecap, gets the winner. RSL leaves BC place with a victory on opening day. Later that season, the Whitecaps travel to RSL in September in good form. You know, you got Richie Larea in the group. Yeah, you're doing well. Brian White opens the scoring, 17th minute. Header. Great, great goal. He was on his push of the golden boot at that point. Everything was good. The Whitecaps were winning a bunch of games on the road all of a sudden. Ryan Vera, 47th minute. Absolute piss missile of a free kick that Yohei Takaoka couldn't track. Justin Glad, who just loves scoring against the Whitecaps in 2023, 65th minute goal. 2-1 victory for RSL. 6 out of 6 in this, I guess you can call it the Step Brothers Derby, we'll keep going with, because of 2021. All right. Don't excuse me if you get a bit of deja vu. March 23rd, Sam in the building. We big game. Whitecaps take the lead. Demir Krylak, 33, scores against his old team. Everything's all good. Everything's all dandy. In a near carbon copy of 13 months prior, Anderson Julio, minute 70. Alexandros Katranis, 76 minute. What the heck is it with the Caps taking a lead against RSL? Should they just like stop? Like, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, certainly, I guess I can speak to the feeling in the building this past Saturday. And I don't think in the 30-odd minute, you know, or even at halftime, people were, you know, raising banners and playing the MLS Cup parade, right? Like, it was a goal out of nothing a little bit. The Whitecaps looked stagnant on the ball, and it was really quite a sleepy first half. I mean, Alex, we were sitting there through 15, 20 minutes, and the note sheet was empty. There really wasn't a heck of a lot to talk about. So, you know, I think some of that goes into it. It certainly, at least for this year, I feel like last season, the Whitecaps, maybe they didn't play great football in that first. Well, they were all right in that first match. I think they were better in both those RSL matches last year than they were this past weekend. So to me, it feels like the last season there was a bit of voodoo, a bit of weird stuff going on. Whereas I feel like this past weekend, really that wasn't an unlucky result for the Whitecaps. They just, the intensity level, their tactical discipline, their, you know, the game plan itself just wasn't good enough. And ultimately we can dive into a little bit, you know, the goals as we sort of described to each other and we wrote post-match was one error in defensive shape and then one sort of lucky low XG chance that ultimately you probably can't really do all that much about. And the thing in these kinds of matches is you can survive one of those, right? You can survive one defensive breakdown without the unlucky moment, or you can survive the unlucky moment without the defensive breakdown, but you can't do both. That's the scenario the Whitecaps found themselves in, and they really had no response. So, it's been a flat start to the home portion of the schedule. You know, obviously, I think international duty hurt a little bit as well. No Fafa Pico, no Andres Kubas. I think both of those absences were very strongly felt on Saturday night, but the Whitecaps knew what they were getting into. They were aware of that in advance, and they didn't do a good enough job planning around it and executing. And really, I mean, I think that Demir Krylak goal probably makes the performance for Vancouver look much better than it was, because this was a poor one. And I think, you know, we spoke with Ryan Gauld after the match, and that was kind of his perspective. It was very clear in his mind. He was like, even with the goal we scored, that wasn't really an indication of how we were playing. He was unhappy with, I think, the way the Whitecaps came out, the way they performed. So I think we're going to see a much different squad this weekend. One that's obviously going to be up and motivated for a Cascadian derby, but also, you know, wants to prove with Vanni Sartini back on the touchline that they're far superior to what they showed this past weekend.
Yeah. And I mean, lots to unpack. We'll save the defense for later. I think, again, not much to say about the defense, like of new. It's hard to say after a game where you concede two for the first time all year after conceding two in the previous three games you play, but the Whitecaps, I thought they defended relatively well other than the two breakdowns, but that's football, right? My bigger concern, it's probably where we should start and definitely spend more of our breath. What the heck's going on with the offense, right? That's the big question. It's funny because it's not actually been that bad. They've scored in all four games. They've had two multi-game performances, two solo game performances. All that standing good. They're spreading the love around, right? Like, pretty much no one has more than one goal. Demir Krylak's got one. Ali Ahmed's got one. Brian White, of course, got one. Fafa Pico, Laborda, and Raposo. So they're getting some good depth scoring, which is never a bad thing. But it's less so what the offense is producing, but what's the offense generating? And that's the big worry, because that was heading into the offseason, the Whitecaps, we mentioned it. So good in the XG category last year, so good at generating chances, even after Julian Gressel left and there was every reason for those numbers to fall off a cliff, no, they held steady from pretty much week three all the way to week 36. They were top five in XG4, even as Gressel left and all these new faces came in after. Now, through four games, the Whitecaps are bottom five in a per game of XG against. They're generating less than one XG. And even from the simple stat mechanisms, this week, six shots at home, six shots. That's a rough performance on the road offensively, let alone at home where you expect to be the aggressor. And look, you have the international break absences of Pico and Kubas, but you know, again, I think what we'll talk about now, maybe how we have to reframe how we view Fafapiko's impacts. It feels like every week he's on the pitch or even off the pitch, his stock just goes. Like if this was 21 and we were still doing third sub stocks, whoever got Pico in the preseason would be looking like a genius. But there's still like Brian White and Brian Gold were there. Pedro Vite was in the midfield. Ali Ahmed came off the bench. Demir Krylak started and scored. It's not like the offense was completely like, you're sitting like, oh, this was shorthanded. And that's the bigger worry, that it's not like you're looking at any sort of fixes other than, you know, inserting Ali Ahmed in more regularly. So like, how do we break down the offense? Is it something where is it personnel? Is it maybe something tactically that they start to need to look at? Because it feels like right now they've lost their offensive mojo. And that's a bit of a worry because, man, the way they're defending, if they could get the offense just to league average, they would be top of this West, it feels like, by a pretty comfortable margin. That's how good defensively they've been.
Yeah, I mean, I'll co-sign most of that. I mean, really, you know, as I mentioned when I last spoke, I thought that Ranko Veselinovic dropping deep, leaving space for that first goal, that was the first time really from open play this season where it was like, oh, there's an obvious defensive error. If that's what you're dealing with in match four, I think that's okay. I have actually a reasonably high level of confidence that unless something falls off a cliff here, the Whitecaps are going to be an improved defensive unit this season. Matias Laborda has been really good overall, and I think that's made a huge difference, just a little less pressure on everyone. But on the offensive side of the ball, it's interesting because every time I think, oh, well, this is the factor that's stopping everything from working, I think of something else on the ball that's limiting the way the Whitecaps play. So we can talk about it. Caleb Wilkins wrote a great article, which I'd encourage everyone to go read, about, you know, one simple trick to score more goals. And it's make sure that, you know, amongst your front three players, you have at least two that are fast or pacey. Ryan Gaul's quick. Brian White's not quick. Demir Krylak's not quick. And ultimately, you know, when Gold gets the ball in those pockets, if you don't have anyone with pace, it just makes life too easy for defenders. But we've been over this. I think everyone who follows the Whitecaps knows this. This is not news to anyone. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the other elements that I think could help. Let's say that you're hell-bent on playing Krylak and White up front, at least to some extent. You know, Fafa is not going to start every match. Obviously, Fafa is a potential fix in his own right, but that's not always going to be the case. So the other spot I look is at wing back in those wide roles. Okay, you've got Ali Ahmed. He can stretch defenses. He could make a difference. There's also a question of, do you want to move him further up the pitch? It's an option. Or do you want to move him into the midfield? It's another option. But for me, looking back at the RSL match, you know, I noticed that when Raposo got on the ball, it was this delicate balance between if he, you know, he strode forward and he started combining with Gold, all of a sudden there was loads of space at the back and the Whitecaps could look a little bit exposed. So Raposo felt a little limited in what he was willing to do to get involved in the attack. You've got Jermaine Brown on the other side who, you know, does an okay job, but I think is pretty limited on the offensive side. And so they weren't able to really add any other elements to provide space for Krylak and White, right? If those guys can't move and be pacey. Okay, if you had Ahmed and Levante Johnson out there on the wings, well, now you have players that opposing wide defenders have to worry about, and that's a genuine threat to get behind with pace. So, you know, whoever that ends up being in the long term, also the inclusion of Adekubi could have some changes as well. But I think that's one other thing to look at. And then, you know, finally, the problem, a final problem in the midfield on Saturday was that without Andres Kubas, Pedro Vite was being asked to do the lion's share of defensive work. And when that's the guy who does most of your progression through the midfield and you know, gets on the ball in those spaces and kind of, you know, breaks lines or, you know, progresses it with the ball at his feet, it just, his defensive responsibilities limited his effectiveness on the ball. And, you know, I mean, we heap some praise on Alessandro Schopf in a wide role the week prior, but, you know, he looked like he had cement in his boots on Saturday. It was too much running for him to play effectively. And there were the spaces between Schopf and Vite in the midfield and the attacking three was just way too wide at times. Like you just, especially in person, you see how the massive gaps that were being created. So yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying it's really everyone outside the back three that is in some way contributing to this issue at the moment. So I think in that respect, there's no bad ideas. They need to look at everything. It needs to be a holistic approach to attack. I do think also that's what Vanni Sartini believes in. He doesn't believe in just hoofing it up to Brian White and Ryan Gauld and everyone else get out of the way. He wants to get the whole team involved. And yeah, I think ultimately, you know, in the short term, the front three needs some support, some help as they work through things and find out the right combination. And, you know, we'll see if Fafa plays this weekend. Maybe it just goes back to the way that front three was looking and all as well. But I think there's some deeper issues that need addressing as well.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good way to sum it up. Deep issues that need addressing. And it feels like there's different ways to tackle this. I think also a big thing that's clear now, to the point that I think teams have kind of figured out the Gauld and White combination. And that's not a bad thing because they can still be extremely dangerous. Just look at what we've seen in glimpses. Gauld's had some, you know, he's had some mixed performances, but he's had some, for the most part, he's been very good. But just look at this White to Krylak goal. This Whitecaps team, when you give them space in the middle, they hurt you. The way that White got that ball down, carved the pass to Krylak scores, like, oh, like that's what this Whitecaps offense is capable of. But I think what we're seeing from opposing teams at the moment is that they've kind of realized that if you basically force the Whitecaps to hit it to White and Gauld and you really win them in the second balls, that's one area where I've really noticed a big struggle too, is that how many times do they go long, but they're never winning second balls because, you know, Kubas and Vite, when they're playing, and in this game, Schopf and Vite weren't able to step up, and they can't really, it's hard to ask them to step up and win second ball because that's just going to open more dangerous spaces in behind. And I think teams kind of realize that, oh, if there's no threat of speed, we can step right up on White and Gauld. They're not going to beat us in behind, especially not if Krylak's there. Let's play high. Let's force them to win headers and go back, and then let's congest the middle and win second balls. And that kind of feels like a strategy that's really worked. And they've also really pressed the wingbacks a lot. We saw Charlotte do it. We've seen a lot of other teams. They've also kind of homed in on, you take away the wingbacks, you take away that front two. Those are the two main avenues where the Whitecaps hurt you. And I think that's why Pico has been so key, because he's been an X factor of, oh, shoot, this guy can actually beat us in behind. If they go over the top to him, we're screwed. Let's step back. What does that mean? That means more space for Gauld and White. That gives them more time to cook. And then, you know, naturally that potentially opens up other avenues. So I think, yeah, basically the big priority has to be opening up space for White and Gauld, because it feels like whenever they do that, they're at their best offensively. And right now, it feels like in these games, they've just been so congested at these moments. And especially when Krylak's been up there, and it's, again, it feels harsh on a Krylak who he has quality sort of in his goal, and there's moments, but it's just, I think the role that's being asked of him is usually either doesn't suit him, or even in games like this, he just doesn't really mesh with White and Gold, not chemistry wise, but in the way that the Whitecaps are set up. I do wonder if maybe there's a solution where offensively they experiment again. Maybe we mentioned it the other week with, like, maybe you play Gold as more of an eight, and then you end up putting like a Pico on the wing so that you have like Pico, Krylak, Gold, White all on the field at the same time. You could easily do that with Ahmed. I do wonder if that's worth looking at, because again, with the Whitecaps, I feel like you could get away with that structure-wise. Like, they're defending in a 3-4-3. That, and they've been defending very well. That luxury means, I bet you could probably, and we've seen it in glimpses, like a Pico playing wingback, if that means you can get him on the field, or an Ahmed playing wingback too. Conversely, I wonder if those are things they look at. And of course, Adekugbe's return will be massive. And, you know, once he gets up to full fitness, I think his ball progression will be used. But yeah, I think right now the big issue is just figuring out what is contributing to the teams, really marking out White and Gold, because yeah, through four games, what, Gold still doesn't have a goal contribution. It's harsh to say it's a slow start, because again, his performances have been good, but you'd like to have him a goal or an assist by now. And White has the goal and assist from Dallas, but other than that, oh, and the assist from this game, but other than that, you're not getting him involved as much in the box as you'd like. And yeah, and I mean, we see how much White's missed when he comes out with the concussion too. So like, the fact that you could say he's not been up to his full speed and he's still so missed. Yeah, it feels like the Whitecaps offense is a bit of a weird place right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that last point is a really good one, because this is something we've kind of been on since just before playoff time last year, where teams finally started to key in on denying those hold up opportunities for Brian White, as you said, you know, not letting them win those second balls. And it really did start to take a dent out of what White and Gold could do. And Vancouver needed something else to threaten teams with. And they thought to some extent that Demir Krylak was going to be that secondary threat, that guy that could pop up at the edge of the box, be a threat to pass, be a threat to shoot. It still has potential and I think can work in some respects, but it doesn't work in building up out of the back and creating space. It works when you're already in the final third, when you're already cruising around the edge of the box, but actually getting into those dangerous positions with things being so stagnant just doesn't seem to work at the moment. So yeah, as you kind of outlined, I think it's, you know, if Pico's not going to play up front, then you have to look at, you know, I think you need two of the three pacey guys in Ahmed, Levante, Pico. You know, they have to both play at wingback if you're going to go with this same front three, because then at least there's a threat for the center backs or a threat for Kubas and Vita to hit a long ball wide and behind that the defenders have to respect. So we're going to see something different this weekend. I would have to think the Whitecaps have, you know, they've hit their head against the wall a little bit with this same setup, trying to find a way to make it work. But I think it's clear that some changes are going to be needed. And with Vanny on the touchline, I think we probably see that this weekend. I mean, Alex, do we, you know, it seemed like it was kind of a little bit too little too late when Ali Ahmed came on, as it turned out, but you saw the impact that he was able to provide last weekend in RSL. I mean, is part of it just as simple as getting Ali Ahmed back in the starting lineup, really?
Yeah, it feels like that was a no-brainer, right? I was really surprised when Ali Ahmed told, you know, Hard Journalist, as we mentioned in the week, that he was good to start and good to play 60, 90 if he needed to. And to have him come off the bench, because I feel like someone like Ahmed could have been very used from the start of the game. So look, it's four games in the season. I think at this point, if he's not ready to start, who knows when he will be. So again, we'll just repeat what we've been saying the last few weeks. Start him if he's good to go. Because yeah, I think what's clear as well is that he has a dynamism to make things happen when he comes on, take guys on 1v1. That was just immediately felt when he brought in, because yeah, for the large parts of the game before he was on, it was the Whitecaps build-up play just felt very like hit and hope at times. Like the White and Krylak goal, even that kind of just came out of nowhere. Like, oh, ball falls to White, he finds Krylak. Like, oh, okay. With Ahmed, he's going to try to grab the game by the scruff of its neck, even if it's not successful. And that's huge. That's a bit of a different look offensively where, you know, someone like Gold, that's not his style. He's not going to be someone who wants to get on the ball and take guys on 1v1 the way Ahmed does and drive for. Neither is White. Their creativity, their genius is in space and then all that sort of stuff. And I think having an Ahmed on creates space for a White, for a Gold to be dangerous in the same way a Pico does. So, man, I mean, we'll have to see what's up with Brian White because, of course, he's in concussion protocol, currently listed as questionable for this game. I'm sure by the time some of you listen, we may have some more clarity on his situation, but I'd love to see what a scenario looks like where Gold, White, Ahmed, and Pico are all on the field at once. Because I think what Pico and Ahmed can do on the ball, where Pico has a lot of the similar things you mentioned to Ahmed, where he wants to take the ball and wants to make things happen, that can open up the space for White and Gold. That's huge because that feels like whatever solution there is to the Whitecaps attack, it feels like giving White and Gold the keys or the answer. And right now, and opposing teams are doing a very good job of making sure that isn't the case. And that's only, you know, aided by when a Krylak's there. Cause I like the theory of the combination play between Krylak, Gold, and White. We saw it in Tigres with both legs. They were very dangerous as a trio and we see it in flashes, but I don't know what it was about the Tigres game that Tigres got caught out so much by it. I don't know if there was naivety from their part or just the way they defend, but for whatever reason, the three that Krylak, Gold, and White have started together, it just feels like opposing defenses have already kind of figured out that trio, which has been a bit surprising. I don't know if that's them also realizing the strengths of Gold and White last year. I don't know if this is what, but clearly they've done their homework and it's paid off for them.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones where, you know, MLS teams are going to be a little bit more intimately familiar with last year's tape, playing against them last season, what they maybe did right and did wrong, what they were able to adjust to. Obviously, you know, Tigres got that little taste of the Whitecaps in the League's Cup, but I think they were a bit of a different team then. And so I feel like they just the little specific tactical intel that these MLS teams have is probably a little bit more on the money, and Tigres probably thought to some extent they could just, you know, play their way and see the result through. And at the end of the day, they were able to do that despite the fact that Vancouver did give them some trouble at times. Okay, Alex, flipping things just briefly, I mean, do we have any, we kind of set our piece to some extent on the defensive side. Do we have anything more to say about the two goals given away specifically from the match against RSL before we kind of start to look forward here?
I'd say all I'd say is I don't feel ready to hit the panic button on the defense based on this game. I think it continued a good start. They kept the XG low. They're still in a pretty good spot, I think, in that regard, in terms of XG against per game. They defended well. And yeah, I think it was just two unfortunate mistakes that I think in a game, ideally, you don't make more than one of. And especially when your offense is struggling the way it is to get that cohesion, you really don't want to make one, let alone two. So, I think it was definitely good learning lessons, something where, you know, Ranko, maybe he just drifted, right? And it's something with the zone defense, you can't really afford that because the whole principle is sticking together and being organized. And he steps like 2 feet, all of a sudden it plays an Anderson Julio on, and it's a whole different story. So that's a little mistake. And look, as for Takaoka, yeah, it was a pretty ugly goal to concede from Katranis, but I think that's one where that's a pretty, I can't say fluke shot, but it's not a shot you're getting hit with so all that often. Like, goalkeepers cheat on every cross. That's sometimes a secret to those who are good at winning crosses, knowing when to cheat. And I think it's one where 9 times out of 10 Katranis crosses that ball, Takaoka, because he tried to anticipate, he gets there. It's just you got caught out in the one where you cheat a bit and Katranis maybe mishits it, maybe he means it, who knows. I'm sure if you ask him, he'll say he meant it didn't fully look like it. You get caught out again. That's just an error that it's tough on Takaoka, but that's one that you'll Trust me, you see it all the time with goalkeepers. How many times do failed crosses just end up over the bar, end up hitting the crossbar? Unfortunately, Takoka's mistake ends up on the back of the net at a poor time. But no, I'm still very high on the defense, and that's huge because, again, I think while they figure out this offense, it's keeping them in games. It's keeping them competitive. And say had they not made any mistakes as they've done at times this season, this could have easily been a game they won 1-0. And that's wild to think, considering that they didn't play all that well, right? Like, this isn't a case like RSL, like you mentioned the last two times, where they played really well and lost 2-1 and you were perplexed. This was more like, yeah, they didn't play that well. 2-1 is probably a fair result. But then you're like, oh, actually, they could have done better. So definitely something to monitor. I think a big thing, too, is confidence. How will this affect their confidence of they were defending really well? Will this hurt them to think, well, we made two dumb mistakes? Maybe what's like get in your own head. But I don't see a reason why. Like, they're obviously very used to the system and should hopefully keep it that way. But I guess lastly on RSL, while we're here, do you want to just quickly talk about Levante Johnson's cameo? Because we finally got to see him play, and he got to play up front, which was kind of nice. That's what he used to play in college and in MLS Next Pro. Haven't always seen that at the MLS level, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add to I think what I said already, which is just it's good to see the some pace up front for Vancouver, and I think like Fafa, you know, there's more there than just being able to stretch defensive lines. Like Levante has a really nice first touch. He has good attacking instincts. I think underrated passing vision. He's also, you know, a physically imposing frame that I think, you know, can give defenders in those wide positions some trouble. So, but you know, there's a lot of different elements to the Levante's game to like. I think we need to see more as time goes on. And just to pick up on the one thing you said earlier, yeah, I like the point that I think it's maybe easy in the wake of a 2-1 loss to kind of go, oh, everything was terrible from the match last weekend. But as you said, they were really in a prime position to pick up a point, if not three, from a subpar performance. And, you know, overall, through four matches this season, they've already done a better job of juicing results out of mediocre performances. So the fact that they're able to be sitting in an okay position, having not really clicked anywhere near top gear yet, I think is encouraging. Because if we see this team actually perform the way they're capable of, you have to think that the results are going to come along with it as well. So, you know, I would rather see this Whitecaps team be in second or third gear, but cruising along mid-table than, you know, being in fifth or sixth gear, but struggling on the outside edges of a playoff spot. So I think they're at a good stage in progression right now. It's just important that they're able to, you know, continue gearing up as time goes on here in the MLS season.
Yeah, just continue to build linear growth. That's always the goal. But yeah, I guess on that note, Levante Johnson, hopefully he continues some linear growth. I think it was just nice to see the way he stretched that defense. But yeah, as you mentioned, he got into some good areas. He's just dangerous. I hope to see him more in that role because we've seen a lot of him at wingback, which he's done fine in. But why not unleash him a bit in up front if you're struggling with speed? Look, if Brian White's not available for this game against Portland, while we'll talk about their defense shortly, they've got a very good defense now and a good goalkeeper. They're not, let's just say they don't have the speediest defense in the world. Who knows? Maybe if White's out, give me some more Levante up front. Give me a Levante, Pico, Ahmed all on the field at once. Screw it. Really test the wheels on that Portland defense if you so be inclined. So definitely hope he can build off this. It was good he got an extended run, even if it was in an unfortunate circumstance with White's head injury. So more growth from Johnson to build off of. But I guess on that note, it's pretty much RSL. Just a weird game, really, right? Like, nothing too much to dissect. That two defensive breakdowns, the offense continues to struggle. Can they fix that in time for Portland? We will try to talk about that. But before we do, of course, we got Around MLS in 5. And man, freaking international breaks, man. Not only are they chaotic for the table because some teams were missing like eight players and other teams are missing one. It was also very bad for my fantasy team. I only had like 50 points this week after having averaging like 75, 80. It just wasn't a good week for my fantasy. I made the idiot choice of not picking up Denny Bouanga this week. So I'm crying because I had him earlier. I bet on him earlier and he didn't score. I'm like, oh, whatever, I'll take him out. So mistakes were made, but very weird week just of results. Where do you want to start with that, Sam?
Yeah, well, I guess first of all, probably a disclaimer, at least from me and probably from both of us, with Whitecaps FC2, with Canada, with a home match. It wasn't quite as we're probably not as on top of what was going on around MLS than we would be in an away week or a week where there was less going on the Canadian and West Coast soccer front. So with that out of the way, I mean, yeah, weekend of maybe like, I don't want to say surprising blowouts, but blowouts given the way that things have gone this year caught me a little off guard. Obviously, the Red Bulls huge over Inter Miami. As you mentioned, LAFC and Denny Bouanga, they are back blowing out Nashville. Yo, TFC 2-0 win over Atlanta United. We had Seattle losing again. San Jose getting finally on the right side of the score sheet in the win column. I mean, shout out to San Jose. I'm glad to see Lucci and Co. make a little bit of noise there, but obviously people in Seattle a little bit concerned. So yeah, amidst the international break, some big results, some strange results. I think it just continues, Alex. The early season has been in large part characterized by a lot of parity throughout the league, a lot of inconsistent play. You were mentioning before the show, and I think it's accurate that the Columbus Crew, despite the fact they lost last weekend, there was a red card in that one. You know, they're maybe the one team that looks like they're playing at a level above the rest. But other than that, it's kind of wide open from week to week. And I think we saw that this past weekend, especially with some players away, because it was wide open.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to sum it up. That really, at the moment, the only team I feel like legit contender, which is funny to say after a 2-0 loss, albeit one where they got a very early red card. It was just a weird game for the Crew. It is Columbus. I think they're the only team I've seen that's just gone like, yeah, this is a legit contender. Cincinnati's very close, to be fair. I think I'd throw them in that mix. So shout out to the Ohio teams, despite dealing with Champions Cup, Cincinnati's top of the East, 3 wins, 2 draws. They haven't been as dominant, say, as they were last year, but I still think the Cincinnati team is getting up to full gear. But yeah, everyone else has been so mercurial. It's like there's Miami, right? When Messi's on, when Suarez is feeling, when Suarez gets the good knee injection, when Busquets is on his game, Gressel's balling out. Like, they're so fun to watch. They blow teams out the water, but all of a sudden, Messi's injured. Suarez has a weekend like this week where unfortunately I picked him up in fantasy and I didn't realize he had the faulty knee injection week because he did not look very comfortable out there against the Red Bulls, strolling around in the rain looking absolutely miserable. They all of a sudden look like a wooden spoon team, right? And that's so many of these teams across the board. And then you have teams like a TFC in Montreal who've been on the upswing. You're still at the early stages of them with new coaches where you're like, just keep proving it week in, week out. Toronto, every win they get, I'm impressed, because even if they do completely have the wheels fall out of them, every win they get now will help them make the playoffs. We've always said early wins make a massive difference. And the fact they're now up to 3 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss, like huge for TFC. And there's no better way to sum it up than the West, because really, Minnesota's been really convincing. I'll give them that. Like, the funny thing is, I still think they have another gear to give based on the talent, and based on the fact Eric Ramsey's still getting into play. But other than that, the West is screaming for someone to step up and really grab the horns, because the Galaxy have looked great. 12 goals offensively. That's second in MLS behind Miami. They've also got 9 against. It's just way too open, way too chaotic. Then we have the Whitecaps, where they're still figuring out their offense. Then you have Portland, which is team more chaos right at the moment. RSL as well as just hasn't been themselves. LAFC, we can talk about Seattle. Like, there's a lot of good teams where in a few months, and you tell me any of those teams I mentioned, like you could tell me Portland's top of the West. We'll break them down in a bit. Their roster is very good. I could back that. LA Galaxy, Whitecaps, RSL, LAFC. Heck, if Seattle turns it around, I'd back that. But right now, no one other than Minnesota stepped up, and that's why the Loons are top of the conference. And I mean, these weekends kind of sum it up, how an LAFC looks so world-beaty finally, but then how a team on the flip side, Seattle, just say they snatched defeat from the jaws of a draw.
Yeah, I think just, you know, this is a North American sports commissioner's dream, right? Because all these teams are on pretty level footing. We're talking about, you know, previewing Portland this week, and obviously Colorado got blown out on opening weekend, but since then they've showed positive signs. That's another team that if they're up near the top of the West midsummer, I won't be surprised at all, because there's a guy like Jordy Mihailovic who's not even really hit his stride yet. Sam Vines, you know, you haven't seen as much as he can give. So this is very consistent, certainly across the Western Conference, where teams maybe haven't hit that next gear yet. And yeah, maybe 5, 6, 7 weeks from now, we're going to start to see some separation. But in the meantime, I think things are going to remain tight here. Ultimately, I think most of these rosters are reasonably evenly constructed, to the point where things like injuries, things like coaching, you know, secondary competitions, how those are going to have an impact on the MLS table come the end of the season. So, so that's like, you know, in Seattle right now, they're dealing with so many injuries, and, you know, is it going to do enough damage to the point where it really prohibits their ability to be in an advantageous playoff spot, or is it one of those things that when all those guys get fit, all of a sudden look out and they're hitting top stride come the middle of the summer? So it's going to be fun to watch out for. Right at the end, we'll point out a couple of matchups that we're eagerly anticipating this weekend. But Alex, are we ready to take a look at Portland Timbers in just a second here?
Yeah, I think so. Just one last point, I think, about the West too. Maybe that's something we discounted in our previews. So many of the teams have had questions to ask that we didn't maybe realize, and they're still answering them, right? Minnesota, what would they look like without Adrian Heath for the first time in forever? The answer is pretty darn good. They're still have another
significantly better.
Significantly better. LA Galaxy, can they rebuild? The answer is it looks like it, but they need to fix that defense. The Whitecaps, we've been ad nauseum what their questions are. They've answered some, like defense. All of a sudden, is it going to come at the expense of the attack? Portland was, what is Phil Neville going to bring as a coach? And so far, it's actually been surprising, and they've got a really good roster. So it's like, can they finally get that post-Valeri, post-Blanco team? RSL, can they just step up and be contenders and not be a team that just sneaks in and finishes seventh every year or sixth? Can they actually legitimately be contenders? LAFC, for example, maybe we're discounting how much a Carlos Vela was a part of this team, even though, like, if that goes without saying, but even over the last year or two, where it feels like it kind of shifted from the Vela show to the Buanga show and the other guys around, maybe realized how important Vela is, and especially for a Chirundolo, who Steve Chirundolo came in and he right away had a stacked LAFC roster. Guys like Gareth Bale, Chiellini coming off the bench. Now that some of those guys have started to go, like a Chiellini retiring, Bale going a year ago, Vela now gone, Frepo gone. What is Chirundolo made of as a coach? And you go through the list, right? Even Seattle, what's the post-Nico Ladero life look like? He didn't start last year, but he was still around. So yeah, that's the interesting thing about this Western Conference. So many question marks, how to answer them. But on that note, let's try to answer one of them, and it's the Portland Timbers. Huge, huge game this weekend. 7:30 kickoff, BC Place. As mentioned earlier, over 23,000. I bet you could probably push that to 25,000 if the weather is nice. It's a long weekend. The derby match. Never know. I wouldn't be surprised if it's pushed to a 25K, which would be great. Great crowd. And for the Whitecaps, lots of pressure, because so far, big crowds continues to not be exactly their forte. It's been a bit of a kryptonite. Axel Schuster this week have made some comments, hard journalist tweeting them out as she does. And it was pretty funny because it was like, Axel's like, we understand we need to be doing better in these games. We will show up. Well, this would be how important would a 3-0, 2-0 win be for the Whitecaps? Huge. But if they do, I mean, Sam, this Portland team, quietly, Phil Neville, somehow the leader of a quietly good juggernaut that maybe we're not talking enough about. Is that crazy to say?
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, the roster turnaround from last year is not crazy, but they've just, I think kind of like what the Whitecaps have been trying to do, they've made some underrated additions, some just key additions in the right areas. And ultimately, I think a big factor is Phil Neville seems to be getting the mercurial guys, the Evanders, the Antonys, playing at a high level week in, week out. You know, now they have lost their last two, but even in that the 3-1 loss to Philly last weekend, Portland played some really good football. But then Neville came out post-match and said something which I thought was really impressive and kind of telling. He was like, listen, just because we played good football and we out-created them in spurts, that doesn't mean we deserve to win the match. It's about more than that. It's about, you know, it's about management. It's about, you know, being clutch in those key moments. And ultimately, his side didn't do that against Philly. Philly was clinical when they needed to be. And so, you know, I think maybe some of those players in the past for Portland that cruised around and were a bit, you know, it was a bit like, as long as I get my goal and assist, it's not really a big deal. I think they're playing a little bit tougher this season, and the, you know, the Brazilians have been really, really, they're always fun to watch, but they've also been very good so far this season. So that goes a long way. Diego Chara, the ageless one, still doing work in the defensive midfield. Eric Williamson, the guy that just can't stay healthy, but a tremendous player when he is fit and available. If he can find some level of consistency, that would be tremendous for Portland. And then at the back, you know, Zach McGraw continuing to grow, Kamal Miller alongside him. I think those two, if we're talking about matchups and we're talking about denying Brian White those holdup opportunities, I mean, McGraw and Miller, that's a pretty good combination to do that at the back. The duo of Crepeau and Pantemis and Gold have been decent so far. Max still kind of finding his way into the team. You know, he's been off on international duty and stuff like that and joining the camp late. But yeah, I think the little tweaks they made at the back, just you know, incremental improvements that they needed, and then just getting those creative attacking players involved, adding a few new guys into the mix as well. It's taken them from, you know, it was a team at the end of last year when after they made the coaching change, I think they showed a lot of good signs, and then they've just been able to build on that going into this year. And this is certainly a team that should compete for a playoff spot. We'll have to see in terms of the long-term consistency, whether they're able to kind of keep up this level of, you know, intensity, or if the new coach bump kind of wears off, maybe Phil Neville's words tire eventually. You never know, that can happen. But at the moment, a lot to like about this Portland side.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing with this Portland side and what the Whitecaps will have to watch out for is that they fixed their biggest need in a big way, and that was defense. It was all sorts of options. They had some really poor goalkeeping too. Last year, they had an XG against of 44, and they allowed 58 goals. Like, they had some very...
truly was like Cody Cropper, Thomas Vassall goalkeeping tandem type stuff.
Yeah, like, I think I'd have to refresh. I think it was still Ivasic in goal. Was it still... for Portland, let's just have a look here. It was Bingham, and I think, oh boy, it's funny how, man, goalkeepers will always never cease to impress me, because like 2019-2020, Bingham was an absolute rock. And now, yeah, last year it was Bingham and Ivasic just struggled. I remember reading some of the numbers, and I was like, they were definitely one of the teams I had a feeling they would go get a goalkeeper. I didn't think it'd be Max Crepeau, but hey, that was big signing one. Terrible goalkeeping, what do you go do? You get one of the best in MLS. That was massive signing. I think that's legitimately the difference between them missing out on the playoffs and making the playoffs already without going into any addition. Because like I mentioned, they weren't that bad defensively last year. Again, 44 XG is about middle of the pack. 58 goals against is only worse. The only team worse than them was the Galaxy. It was 67. But like, what the heck was 67 in 34 games? It's almost two goals a game. What the heck were they doing in LA last year? But yeah, this Portland defense. So the Crepeau signing was a huge one. I think that was massive. But also Kamal Miller. I think the fact that they were able to get it. Let's be honest. I think you probably could say a top five center back on his day in MLS via a trade for a relatively good price out of Miami. That was a good piece of business, especially that someone like McGraw was good. But the problem is, it was around him. Guys like Lars Mabiala, some of the other names that they used to throw around and start at center back last year alongside him. Zuperich, another one who's still around. Those were guys who had maybe lost a bit of a step. And now to get two guys in McGraw and Miller in their primes, chemistry together as Canadians in front of Crepeau, that's made all the difference. Funnily enough, you mentioned their five games so far. They've drawn one, won two, lost two. The two wins and the draw all came with McGraw and Miller starting. So that shows that when that partnership's together, funnily enough, McGraw got a bit of a knee injury. Zuperich came in and paired with Miller. They lost 1-0 to Houston. And then Miller goes off to international duty right when McGraw gets healthy. McGraw and Zuperich pair, they then lose. I think this weekend will be massive for them to have McGraw, Miller, Crepeau. And then from there, yeah, the defense was just that alone. And like I mentioned, Miller and Crepeau, I think, pushed them to a team that can push for 6th, 5th in the West. Then you look at the rest of the roster, right? Like you got Chara still doing his thing. Williamson, if he can stay healthy, it's massive. Evander, as we mentioned, very weird profile player, but very talented. He scores goals. He creates goals. It's a valuable commodity in MLS. They bring in a guy like Antony. But the big signing now is Jonathan Cabecita Rodriguez. $7 million. They ended up paying for him, I think, or at least whereabouts. They offered $12+ million for Bertame, the striker at Monterrey. They got rejected. They went and spent $7 million at Club America for Cabecita Rodriguez. He's legit. One game, one goal already. First start, he found the net with the header. Funnily enough, Cabecita, for those unfamiliar with Spanish, I imagine you know what it means. But for those who don't, it means header. He scores headers. He scores a header right in the in his first game. That is another massive, massive signing. Because even over the last few years, a team that's always had the likes of Valeri, Blanco, Yimi Chara, who's of course now gone, they've been a team that can create. But number nine is... it's been a bit of an issue. I mean, remember the Polish striker they had that was very frustrating. They've had other few names. It feels like since the last 4 to 5 years, that number nine position has been a big question mark. And that's another one that pushes them from a team that could be top five to a top two, top three contender. Credit to Portland for making those moves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those ones where, you like what Demian Asprilla has to offer, but you probably don't want him starting every match. And now you've got a variety of attack up front. And yeah, Evander and Antony, those Brazilians, they like to take shots from outside the box, but they can also whip it across. And having someone that can get on the end of those dangerous crosses is going to do a lot for this Portland team. So, I hate to sound so positive about the Timbers, but I do think there's a lot to like about this roster. As you said, just kind of, investing in the spots where they needed work. And I guess that was the benefit of this Portland team last year, is it wasn't like they needed to tear things down. It was just you knew the weaknesses were, clinical goal scoring and goalkeeping / defending, and they've addressed those issues. It's just building that consistency, getting everyone integrated over time. I'm curious. I mean, Alex, in terms of the tactical matchup with Vancouver, what do you think that the Whitecaps can do to stress this defensive line? I mean, this is one where Miller and Capro have been away with Canada. McGraw's coming back from injury, although he did play last weekend. is this one where, you know, the more, I had thought to sound like a broken record, but the more pacey players the Whitecaps can put on the pitch to stress those guys out defensively, the maybe the more difficult they can make the Timbers' day on the road.
Yeah, definitely things to watch. I mean, what's funny is that we could, I think if we were to predict Portland's 11 for this game and predict the Whitecaps 11 for this game, we actually might get more of the Portland 11, right? Because it's pretty obvious who's gonna start. But yeah, so I think that's obviously, you know, very, very good. What I think is to watch out for is, yeah, that McGrath and Miller pairing, because while they have strength so far this year, McGrath again continues to be very good in the air. Kamal Miller's improved a lot in the air through the first, I think, three games, which has been a plus, because that's sometimes been an area of his game that was questioned in Montreal and in Miami. So like that's been good. But one area that's McGrath in particular, we saw it at the Gold Cup, on the turn, he can struggle with his hip movement. Kamal Miller as well, there's been, you know, he sometimes, if you can catch him moving and turning in behind, it can be a bit of a intriguing battle. Get some pace on the pitch, because if you're not going to get many headers against a McGrath, he's a tall figure, he's imposing. Miller pairs nicely alongside him. I'd say try to beat them for pace. Of course, a Crepo is going to be sweeping, he's going to be aggressive, that's what he does. But if you can catch him like a Pico one-on-one with the McGrath or an Ahmed, you get that right movement, I think that's something to watch, especially with the fullbacks Mascara and Miller. You know, this Portland team wants to play on the front foot. I'd expect them to be relatively aggressive. So I think that's something to watch, especially because the midfield, you know, Chara is going to clog up that midfield. It's what he does. I'd say really try to get that speed and stretch this Portland defense and get them running. And then, yeah, otherwise, you know, we'll have to see. I think the other big thing to watch is how do they deal with Rodriguez? How do they deal with Cabecita? Like the Whitecaps this year, as we know, the big question was the wide balls. They've been a lot better, but they haven't faced all that many. It feels like this game wouldn't be surprising if Portland's just spamming in crosses to Cabecita. How does Ranko handle that matchup? How does the zone, you know, compensate for the fact that Cabecita might be targeted? I think that's also another big matchup to watch on the other side of things as well.
Yeah, and then also I think how do whoever plays at those wingback spots for Vancouver, how do they track back and how do they handle whether it's Moreno, Antony, Evander up front, those three in behind Cabecita for Portland. You know, it's going to be a lot of work for Pedro Vite and Andres Kubas, but also for whoever's playing in those wide spots to track back to try to disrupt those crosses into the box, right? I think a best form of defending for Vancouver would be denying some of those opportunities where they can, not letting those guys have joy around the edge of the area on the ball. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. That's the one position for Vancouver that remains a bit of a revolving door. As you said, unlike Portland, where I think we pretty much know what the 11 is going to be ahead of time, Vancouver still some questions with, you know, Ali Ahmed coming back up to full fitness. Sam Adekubi sounds like he's maybe going to get some minutes, but I wouldn't expect him to start. Well, okay, now you've got the rotating cast of Schopf, Javane Brown, Ryan Raposo, Seb Berhalter, you know, Fafa Pico, Levante Johnson, where are all those guys going to fit in? That's a problem that Vanni Sartini has to try to figure out this weekend. And obviously he's going to look at what Portland has to offer. I think particular, you know, yeah, someone like Chara clogging up the middle of the park, those physical center backs, it really cries out for Vancouver to do something different offensively, which I think might be the push they need to work on some new tactical approaches.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, do we want to throw out a projected Whitecaps 11? I mean, we could always throw a Portland one, but we'll spare that. I think you can get a pretty good idea of who will start for them. For the Whitecaps, I mean, I'll start. I think really the big question is the wingbacks. I think we'll get Takoka in goal. You get a back three of Laborda from right to left. Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman, yada, yada, yada. Kubas and Vite in the middle. I think you go front three of White. Oh, Gold, Pico. White's the real question mark. just because we really can't get any sort of gauge on his head injury, because we genuinely won't know till the day of, because there's always with these sorts of things, there's really strict protocols of usually like you have to have 24 hours between your symptoms and then 24 hours between when you start X, like all this, these checks and balances. I think because of that, if White doesn't start, it's Krylak. I think Krylak's probably going to be the one they stick, and I think that would make sense. It's like for like more. I mean, again, I'm saying go Team Chaos and you give a front three of Levante, Johnson, Pico, and Gold, but I don't think Vanny's going to go into that. By the way, Vanny Sartini will be on the touch lines for the first time. You can predict that. Because of course, his suspension after being shortened will be there. So I think it's either White or Krylak. I'll put Krylak just because maybe White starts on the bench for precautionary reasons or holds out. And then at the wing back, what is it going to be at wing back? For what it's worth, on the right side, I think an Antony's going to want to cut inside a lot more. So maybe you can get away with the more aggressive wing back. But then on the outside, Santiago Moreno, a bit more of a traditional winger. Do you want, you know, someone a bit more of a traditional fullback? But at the same time, the Whitecaps structure doesn't really change for anyone defensively. I don't think they'll care. So I think because of that, knowing what they want in this game, I could see Ahmed Raposo starting, which would be, you know, it'd be nice to see the pair of Canadians out there trying to attack the space behind the Portland fullbacks, especially if they end up being quite aggressive.
Yeah, so my thought is exactly the same. I think if here's the only layer I would maybe add on top of that. So if Brian White starts, I can see Raposo and Ahmed. The only thing I could see is that if you did go, or even Demir Krylak, like you said, but if you did happen to go for the all guns blazing, Levante, Johnson, Fafa, Pico, with Ryan Gold underneath, then I think maybe you throw a Javane Brown or an Alessandro Schopf into the mix in that wide role, just because you're probably not going to have Raposo, Ahmed, Levante, and Fafa. It would be tremendous, but I don't think we're going to see all those players on the pitch at the same time. And ultimately, I do think it's sensible because Portland has enough dangerous attacking pieces that you probably do want some bodies back there. But yeah, I think if in all likelihood you're going to see either Krylak or White up front, and then I think you know, asking a little bit more of your wingbacks to get on the ball to either cut inside or threaten down the line. Is, you know, there's certainly value in that. So yeah, I think lineups matchups should be reasonably easy to predict. So both Neville and Sartini will be working feverishly this week, I'm sure, to come up with some wrinkles to try to dupe the other into create some advantages come Saturday night.
100%. I guess on that note, let's do predictions. It's been a rough season for us. It has not been good. Maybe we got too lazy and are just always picked the home win and always picked the away draw or loss. And now maybe you got to throw conventional wisdom on its head. This one is genuinely tough because of Portland's pedigree, the fact that they're finally going to have McGraw, Miller, Prepo all back together, Cabecita. And this could end up being a tough one for the Whitecaps, but I think they need a home win. I'm kind of the score where I think it'll be a 1-1 draw where the Whitecaps home form kind of continue. I imagine you must be doing the same based on the reaction where, like, again, it's maybe just the absolute cynic where the Whitecaps just, you know, continue to sputter a bit on the road. It's fitting of them. Because I just think this Portland team, it's very good. And with the Whitecaps still yet to turn in, really, like, other than the Dallas game, yet to turn in a fully convincing performance, they're going to need to prove otherwise that they can go out and beat a team like Portland. Because right now, if I'm making a power rankings, like, a Portland team could be near the top, at least based on what we've seen, what I've seen from them on paper and the brief glimpses I've gotten.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1 as well. I think I see it turning out the same way where, you know, I kind of rate, let's to be a little bit positive, I think I rate both of these defensive units enough given what I've seen so far that, you know, I always like to predict like a 3-2, 2-2, 3-3, something crazy. I don't see that in this match, given these teams' track record so far this season. I guess the only thing I would say is that if this match turns out a little bit like FC Dallas with Fafa Pico starting, like the Whitecaps still do have that ability to break a match open. If they can create enough space to get Gold and White clicking, they have someone like Fafa running off the ball, they have Raposo getting involved, they have Ahmed getting involved. Things can open up quickly for Vancouver. They're still very, very dangerous when things go the right way. It's just when teams sit in that block and are comfortable and Vancouver can't get teams out of that shell, then they really struggle. So that's just something to watch out for that I think ultimately, because the Whitecaps are the home team, because they do have that element to their game, they still have the ability to break this one wide open and you know, find a big home win. But I rate Portland enough to think that this one maybe stays cagey and that, you know, perhaps Brian White and Gabasita each find a goal. But other than that, no one's able to really break it wide open.
Yeah, I think it's very reasonable. It's something where, yeah, he'll be up to whatever team can kind of grab the scruff of what should be a pretty even, pretty cagey, pretty competitive game. Can Gold really take over this? Can an Evander be chaotic? It feels like this is the kind of game for those kinds of players to find that gap when there's two defensively solid teams. So yeah, it should be fascinating. Matchup of number three, the Whitecaps versus number four in the West, Portland. Whoever wins this probably ends up, well, they will end up top three by the end of the week. It could end up top two because Philly hosts Minnesota. So a bit of an interconference one on the road. Big trip for Minnesota, who had a bye last week. Meanwhile, LA's hosting Seattle there in second. Who knows how these results will turn out. But
I just wanted to add one thing before we look at a couple other matchups in MLS this weekend. Something else to give love to, I think, is these are two goalkeepers in Max Crepeau and Yohei Takaoka that at times have the ability to take over or to have a standout performance. So this 1-1 could turn into a 1-0 if Max or if Yohei stands on their head, has a, hey, 5, 6, 7 save performance. I think that's something to watch out for as well, because each of these keepers, when they're really on their game, they can steal one.
That's definitely something to consider, especially with a guy like Crepeau. You know he's going to love playing in Vancouver again, especially the fact that he's now coming as a Cascadia arrival. Man, if there was already a little anger, a little hate coming when he was on the LA-based team, like, I can only imagine what the being on a Cascadia arrival will be like. So, no, definitely a big one, especially with those Western implications that I mentioned. If Mini drops points, if LA Galaxy drop points, whoever wins this game could be top of the West by the end of the weekend, which, again, this is early doors, but every point matters. But on that note, quickly before we end up signing off for this week, just a quick look around MLS. A lot of interesting games this weekend. We've highlighted three. First up for me, I got Colorado Rapids versus LAFC. It'll be interesting to see what this Colorado Rapids side can do. They'll want a bit of a bounce back. After a frustrating week, they ended up losing 1-0 to the Dynamo late. And on a goal, 96-minute winner for Brad Smith. And watch the goal if you can. It's hilarious. And man, did Colorado miss a young Canadian, Moise Bombido, who was away with Canada. They kind of got beat for pace at the back, which they haven't so often when he's been there. So look for Chris Armas' side to bounce back and get back on track on what's been a decent start against a red-hot LAFC team coming off a 5-goal explosion. And meanwhile, in the West, LA versus Seattle is one you have to watch. This LA team is must-watch TV right now just in terms of entertainment. They're going to score. They're going to concede. Is that the sort of chaotic, wide-open game that Seattle needs to get back on track? Seattle, one of just three teams in MLS without a win. It's New England. It's Seattle. It's Austin FC. So a big one for Seattle.
Yeah, absolutely massive for the Sounders this early in the season. Obviously just need to grab points where they can. I also think there's a couple interesting matchups. You know, if you truly want to be a person of MLS culture and watch some all East affairs this week, you know, Columbus with a bit of a get right opportunity against Nashville. And Nashville, you know, reeling off of their blowout loss as well, but two good teams. Then, you know, we talked about them as solid performers in the East so far. Cincinnati, maybe that second best team other than Columbus, playing against Charlotte, who's been off to a really good start. So those are ones to watch out for as well. But obviously, those ones you mentioned, Alex, particularly, yeah, Minnesota keeping the run going, the Galaxy and the Sounders, and then the Rapids and LAFC, all fun matchups. In addition to, you know, I think Vancouver, Portland for the impartial observer should be a fun one as well. You know, obviously we have a particular interest in this market, but I imagine that's one that if you're on the East Coast and you're staying up late, you might not mind tucking into, because Cascadia, I think, transcends, you know, travels around the league pretty well. Those are marquee matchups. So, man, hopefully it's a big crowd. It certainly sounds like it's going to be. Huge shout out to all the supporters, the environment in the stadium. I think it's been really good so far this year, despite the fact the results haven't come just yet. So, if, you know, the Whitecaps are able to get a big result on Saturday night, it could be a lot of fun in the building. So, hoping for that. One thing I should mention, we've been talking about it, but, you know, pour one out for Pepas, the old goal song, and not a fan of, you know, Freed from Desire being thrown into the mix about 5-6 years too late. That's one where I think the Whitecaps should have either stayed with what was working or gone for something original rather than, you know, rehashing a Euro 2018 or Euro 2016 trend. I think we've moved past that at this point, as much as it is a banger in its own right.
Well, it's a banging song, but it's just, yeah, it's a bit random of, you know, this is Will Grigg's song. Like, what's Will Grigg doing these days? Like, remember how good of a player he was when he was banging him in for Wingham? Almost signed for Sunderland, or he did sign for Sunderland in Sunderland Till I Die. Yeah, Will Grigg is 32 now, and he's playing in the National League with Chesterfield. So just to give an idea of where it's come, he's no longer banging them in for Northern Ireland and in the Championship and in the EFL League One as he was for Wigan. I think it's a sign that, you know what, start a new trend. And I liked Pepas, man. It's just, it's something about the energy of it. Just fit the group. You know, a lot of Latino guys on this team. And just like the cry, you nod your head along. I get wanting to change for the sing-along aspect. That's where I do understand of wanting to, like, you know, get the fans singing some sort of, like, no, 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 right? Like, something like that. Because that's, hey, went to a Canucks game recently, and they've got, Simple Minds or whatever, don't you forget about me, and it's just, it's good, it's good vibe, you're just singing la 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 la, like, you score a goal, and I get that. Surely there's a different song you could have picked that still has, like, some sort of sing-along component that, you know, isn't something that's just so tacky, because at least Pepas, I mean, it's not an original song, it's popular, but can't say there's many teams around the world or score a goal, you play Pepas, and especially the Whitecaps scored so many goals games last year. I have fond memories of Houston, hearing that 7 times and just going, oh, I'm just, it's in your head. It's catchy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anyways, I think this is probably what we're going to be stuck with for this season, but just, yeah, a petition, if anyone involved in that decision-making process happens to be listening to this, you know, just making our feelings known. I don't know, maybe I'll have to go down to concourse level and panel some supporters, see what they think.
Yeah, maybe it'll be our task to figure out what a song could be too, right? Like, what kind of vibes? I'm with the old school vibe. Like, find a fun old school song, something that's kind of catchy, something to sing along. Like, I'm with that. But yeah, it's hard, because it's going to have to be something relatively original. But hey, all I'm saying is, if the Whitecaps lose at home this weekend, I think the struggling offense is, can take a backseat. It'll 100% be the absence of Pepa. So big one this week. To be fair, the Whitecaps FC too, they also had Freed from Desire, and they scored four. Actually, they scored five in their 5-3 win against the Rail Monarchs. So if that isn't an endorsement, if you love goals, go watch MLS Next Pro, because my goodness, I can't, you don't see many nil nils in that league. So hey, if you love Freed from Desire, you love goals. Portland Timbers 2 visit the Whitecaps 2 this weekend, and another MLS Next Pro doubleheader. That game's at 2, Whitecaps at 7:30. So busy weekend. So on that note, You can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongaruzic and on Blue Sky at Alex Gongaruzic. Meanwhile, on Threads and Instagram, I'm at AGR on the case. And feel free to leave any sort of reviews, likes, anything of that sort on the podcast. We do appreciate it. And yeah, cheers for making it to 198. Excited for many more. But on that note, I'll let Sam close things off this week.
Yeah, we were having a look, and we're going to hit episode 200 probably right after the Vancouver Whitecaps and Toronto FC. So our timing is good on that front. Looking forward to hitting the big 200. But you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Roboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. Shout out that article about how to score more goals. It's on the Third Sub. Also, a bit of a dive into Ralph Parisseau that we just dropped today as well. So if you're curious about what the young Canadian might have to offer in Vancouver, we'd encourage you to check that out. But pre-match, post-match, all our regular stuff, report cards as per usual. You can also check out our collaboration, Canada Soccer Daily. We're kind of just doing a bit of crossover work with them after the matches. So, if you're already plugged in, maybe you're checking out some TFC stuff, some general Canadian footy talk. You can tuck into our work over there from time to time as well. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.